Aliyah Muhammad Baker's house is full of books. There are books in stacks, books in the cupboards, books bundled into flour sacks like lumpy aid rations. Books fill an old refrigerator. Pull aside a window curtain and there is no view, just more books. There are English books, Arabic books, and even a Spanish language Quran. There are manuscripts, some hundreds of years old, including a biography of the Prophet Muhammad from about 1300. All told, Miss Baker says, the books number about 30,000. These books are fugitives, and Miss Baker, an Iraqi librarian in her mid-50s, is the engineer of their underground railroad. The books constitute about 70%, all that there was time to save, of what was once her library's collection. Before the war began, Miss Baker requested permission from her village governor to move the books to safety, but he refused without explanation. Miss Baker was not easily deterred, and although the library did not allow lending, she often slipped books into the hands of readers and sent them home. In the Quran, the first thing God said to Muhammad was, "Read," she said. As soon as the war started, government offices were moved into the library and an anti-aircraft gun was placed on its roof. But Miss Baker kept going to work, and every evening she filled her car with books and quietly took them home. On April 6, 2003, the day the British entered the city, her job took on a new urgency. At noon, Miss Baker called and found that the government workers had left the library undefended. The next morning, as artillery fire filled the air, she checked in on the library. First, she called the restaurant next door and asked one of the owners for help. And at the library, she discovered that carpets, furniture, and lights had already been looted. The restaurant's owner came to help and enlisted his brothers and employees. An armful after armful of books were taken from the library, passed over a neighboring 7-foot wall into the waiting hands of those on the other side. The books were stacked in one of the restaurant's empty dining rooms. Shopkeepers from across the street joined in, and then some of the neighbors began to help. They used sacks and boxes. Miss Baker even tore down the library's curtains to bundle the books. The group worked through the night and into the next afternoon. After their city grew calm, Ms. Baker and her husband hired a truck to carry the books back to her house, distributing some to trusted friends and library employees. In her neighborhood, Ms. Baker heard whispers that she herself was a looter, if not the shrewdest one. "People were looking at me saying, 'Why is this woman bringing books?' she said. People are stealing much more valuable things than that." These words and Ms. Baker's story first appeared in the New York Times in April 2003, during the beginning of what was known as the War on Terror. Ms. Baker is an unlikely hero. Not many would risk their lives to save books. To most, books are just ink and paper. And to many, her actions seemed ridiculous and unnecessary. Some neighbors and relatives didn't consider it a good use of her time or resources. Yet she remained steadfast, not abandoning her precious books. While others only saw ink and paper, Aliyah Baker knew that they were more than that. Knowing the importance of the books and what they represented, she made sure their words and their ideas stayed alive. Now I have a feeling that Miss Baker would have gotten along very well with the woman from today's gospel story. I can picture them reading books together, discussing history and religion, sipping on a cup of coffee, surrounded by the sweet aroma of nard. They are cut from the same cloth, the two of them. Both are bold and steadfast. Both are full of love and grace. I imagine they would be friends. But unlike Aaliyah, Mark's gospel honors a woman that we don't know much about. We don't know if she grew up in a warm and loving household, or if she was left to fend for herself at a young age. We don't know if she was bubbly and outgoing, the life of the party, or if she was preferred to keep quiet and kept to herself. We don't know much about her, yet we know her story very well. It appears in all four Gospels, with each retelling sharing different details and intricacies. I'm reminded of a cartoon I once saw where Jesus, surrounded by his disciples, says, "Now listen up, I don't want to end up with four versions of this." But indeed, we've ended up with four versions of her story. In three out of the four Gospels, she is never named. And in the fourth Gospel, she is called Mary Magdalene. All four Gospel writers have differing opinions on whether she anointed Christ's head or feet. And in every story, someone is unhappy with her pouring that expensive perfume over Jesus. Many of the details are up for debate. Yet in every story, Jesus honors and recognizes her extravagant gift of love and beauty. In every story, Jesus is the only one who does not shame her or offer her a critique of her gift. Instead, he graciously accepts it, gives thanks, and praises her for her beautiful act. Now, I know those witnessing this scene and getting angry with her are in the wrong here, but there's something about them that I understand. I get them. I'm one of them. I like that they are practical, thinking about the big picture. I appreciate that they want to be good stewards of the resources they've been given. Who really wants to see a year's worth of wages blown in just a few seconds? In one sense, these folks were not wrong to raise the questions they raised. They weren't out of line to ask why Jesus wasn't condemning this act of extravagance. And had they been living in Iraq in 2003, you better believe they would have been questioning Miss Baker about why she was spending so much time and energy saving some dumb books. Certainly, she too could have been doing something more worthwhile. And like those folks, we might wonder if the nard really was too extravagant of a gift, and whether that money really could have been spent in a more efficient way. As outsiders, we can look at it objectively and make the case that, perhaps morally speaking, the money should have been used for the poor. We might be right to say that her gift was over the top, too showy, too much. We would be correct, but we would also be missing the point. Because the point is not whether we are correct or logical or right. The point is that the gifts of love and beauty are never wasteful, no matter how extravagant they are. Because the story is not really about the fact that the nard was so pricey, or the fact that it was poured with such reckless abandon. The story is not about a woman making a financially unsound decision or weighing her options carefully. It's not about whether or not she could have used the nard for another more noble purpose. The story is about her love and devotion. It is about a visible sign of the abundance and grace of God. It's a story about the fact that she did not hold back her love for Jesus. She was not afraid of what others might say. And Jesus' reaction to her is not what many expected. To them, and maybe to us, her gift still doesn't make sense and it still isn't right. But Jesus, who was filled with grace and gratitude, reminds us of what God really cares about. God cares more about our hearts being full than whether or not we are wasting God's love. God would rather see our love overflow in ridiculous ways than to see us hoard what we have, saving it for a rainy day. Our God cares less about counting every coin and more about sharing our abundance, no matter the cost. It's easy for us to paint God's love in a logical manner. Like those gathered around Jesus, we can easily get caught up in what is right and what is wrong, and how we should and shouldn't act, and how we should or shouldn't love. We We can get caught up on how being a good disciple of Christ means that we are charged with keeping a strict account of God's love, that we are to keep a watchful eye on how and when God's love is spent. But restricting grace is never the answer. Hoarding God's love will not solve any of the world's problems. If anything, this gospel story teaches us that we should spend God's love without worrying about being wasteful or extravagant, that we should douse our world in God's grace without the fear that it will run out, because God's love is abundant and God's grace is endless. And if ever we start to wonder if we are being wasteful with God's love, may we remember the stories of these two women, of Miss Baker and this unnamed gospel woman, because they teach us much about what it means to live a life of abundance, even in a world where love might seem scarce. They teach us to look beyond the cost in order to see the value. They teach us to love with reckless abandon. They teach us to be brave and bold even in the face of death and destruction. Because books are more than just ink and paper, and nard is worth more than money, and the grave is worth more than death. Signs of God's extravagant love are written everywhere, and especially in the season of Easter when we celebrate the ridiculous and over-the-top gift of the resurrection. Like most gifts of love and devotion, it doesn't make sense and it isn't rational or logical. We don't deserve it. But it is for us. God's pure and costly love is poured out for us, poured out over us, overflowing, drenching, fragrant love. So may our hearts be full and our hands outstretched as we accept God's never-ending love, which is for us and for all people. Thanks be to God for this extravagant, abundant love. Amen.